Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dentro del área, vaya pasillo, encuentra, le pega, gol, 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 gol,
por favor.
Controla. Ante el tres jugadores, el rechace para Sabiño, pone el centro, solo Stuani. Canta la Nuria, canta la Nuria, canta la Nuria.
¡Gol, gol, 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 gol! El cuarto del Girona en Montjuïc, marca Cristian Stuani. Se vuelve absolutamente loco el banquillo del Girona.
Welcome along to La Liga Loren podcast. La Liga weekends don't usually come as good as this, but we've got an absolute treat for you in store today. My name is Rudy Barlow, I'm your host. I'm joined by Paco Polite after what was a thrilling weekend in La Liga and a thrilling climax to that weekend in the Sunday night partidazo, with Girona beating Barcelona 4-2, a Catalan derby that ended with a Catalan side top of the league. Girona are 7 points clear of Barcelona, and there was quite a chasm on the pitch. We will come on to that in due course. I'm just going to run through the results. We'll come on to Real Madrid in the second half of the show. They drew 1-1 with Betis. The weekend kicked off with a 1-0 win for Getafe over Valencia. And then on Saturday, Las Palmas got 3 points away at Alaves. Big goal from Kylian Rodriguez there. Villarreal lost 3-0 to Real Sociedad and were well and truly outdone. Sevilla on the wrong side of a refereeing decision for many, but beaten by Mallorca, who end their winless streak. And then on Sunday, Atleti beat Almeria 2-1 at home. Cadiz drew with Osasuna, 1-1 in Andalusia. And our thoughts do have to go out to the friends and family of the very unfortunate Granada fan. Descansa en paz. Athletic were leading 1-0 at Nuevo Los Cármenes when the game was stopped in about the 17th minute. Unai Simón grabbed the attention of the referee to alert him to the fact that there was an emergency in the stands, and unfortunately a Granada fan passed away from a heart attack. So our thoughts sort of with them, and yeah, that game has been suspended and will start again on Monday night. Paco, that was a rather unfortunate event, but moving on from that, we did have a thrilling end to Sunday night. How are you, first of all? And yeah, how are you feeling after watching what I think is one of the most iconic La Liga games in recent history?
Yeah, definitely. I think what happened just a few minutes ago over in at Montjuic was one of the best games of the season so far. One of the most iconic games, as you said, in the last couple of seasons. And obviously can become a turning point for the following games in the competition, because at this moment in time, I believe that Girona are finally and utterly believing in themselves. You know, they finally are believing that they can be championship contenders, because we are already in match day 16. I think that after, almost half of the competition, when you are sitting at the top of the standings and watching the rest of the teams just following you and trailing you behind you, I think that Mitchell and his men are starting to believe that they can do it, in the same way as back in the day, for example, Leicester did the same in the Premier League, and other teams have surprised in the past. But, you know, we can't praise enough what Girona are doing. We're going to go in depth in just a few seconds regarding that game. And obviously, as you said, possibly the most, the worst news of the weekend was that Girona fan passed, Girona that Granada fan passing away during the game against Athletic Club. I think it was, you know, a fair call to just call the game off and kickstart it once again on Monday. And yeah, you know, our deep condolences for his family and friends. And regarding the rest of the weekend, as you said, you asked me how I'm doing. Well, Valencia Flan crashed once again on Friday. And the rest of the weekend left a couple of results which are pretty surprising and very spicy, all in all. Because Sevilla once again losing against Mallorca means that Diego Alonso is the worst manager ever for Sevilla, and that is massive news for the team in the negative side of things. Atletico Madrid suffered a lot, Villarreal suffered a lot and were trounced by Real Sociedad, and Las Palmas keep surprising everyone. And obviously we can talk about later what Real Madrid did over at El Benito Villamarín, where Betis had their chances of winning the game. So all in all, I think it was a very interesting weekend, above average in my view. And let's go deep dive into what happened, especially talking about that game between Barca and Girona, 2-4, which is one of the biggest surprises of the season.
Yeah, Dovbyk opening the scoring for Girona. Lewandowski equalised shortly after from a corner. Before halftime, Miguel Gutierrez had two shots that came very close to putting Girona back in the lead before he then thumped one in with the outside of his foot into the top corner. That left it at 2-1 Girona at halftime. They would kind of hold on for about 20 minutes in the second half, but then they would get the third through Jan Valeri. There was a moment when it looked as if Barcelona might get back into it. Gundogan pulls back one goal. It's 3-2 in stoppage time. Lewandowski 6 yards out, free header in the box, scuffs his opportunity. It kind of comes off his face, basically. He misses that chance, and then Christian Stuani puts the icing on the cake for Girona. But on the whole, you were of the opinion that Girona were far better than this Barcelona side in general.
Yeah, I think that it's always interesting to, you know, have our number of hot debates on our WhatsApp chats group between Roman de Arquera and myself. And Roman thought that the game was much more balanced than I did. I think that Girona were 90% of the game mostly in control of the situation. You know, they were playing better football, they were better placed upon the pitch. They did allow many shots by Barca ultimately, but yeah, you have to always count on, you know, the accuracy of the attacking front of the opposition, and in this case Barca weren't as clinical as Girona were. But as you said, for example, Miguel Gutierrez scored the second one for Girona, and he had two massive chances only seconds earlier. So ultimately, I think that the stats, which I, by the way, have over here, more or less tell the story, okay? But it's not the same 31 shots against 15 than 11 shots on target against 7. Overall, I think that the game was much more balanced in that front. And ultimately, Girona were much more clinical because they had the chance of being so because of the way they built up their plays. And overall, possession was very, very balanced. I think it was like 54-46, very, very, very balanced. The passing around precision was also, you know, very, very balanced. And overall, I think that if you analyze this game only from the sense of being more accurate on target, it doesn't really paint the full picture. I think that Girona had their game plan on a much more mature, you know, standardized and ultimately, I would say, held down. You know, overall they had much more a clearer game plan than Barca. Barca just did the same things that they usually do, whereas Girona were able to adapt throughout the game, especially at the beginning when they were 1-0 on top, and they just adapted to the way it was flowing much better than Barca, which only did they're, you know, they play the only way they know. And in this sense, I think that Girona were masterful, especially during the first half. The first half was a masterclass by Michel Sanchez against Xavi Hernandez. And in that sense, I think that Girona were just building up from that very solid groundwork in the first half. In the second one, they took the chances of, you know, the counters and having more attackers on the pitch. Stuani once again showing that 37-year-old is just a number, and he was crucial on the third goal and also score the fourth. So overall, I think that when Girona away from home in such a big ground, not Camp Nou, obviously, Montjuic, but a big ground nonetheless, and against a big team like Barca, feel so comfortable, it means that they definitely are believing that they can do it. You know, they believe, they are believing their role at this point as the leaders of the competition. So, you know, I can't praise Girona enough for the performance tonight. And even though many Barca fans will disagree for sure that Barca had more chances and shots on target and so on, I think that Girona were far superior in this game.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. I think Barcelona had the better of the first kind of 15 minutes or so before Dovbyk scores. And I think they had about 15, 20 minutes in that second half where they created chances, probably should have put one or two away and got themselves back level. But and it should also be pointed out that Rafinha missed two obscenely good chances. Lewandowski, as I say, that one at the end was really poor. Gundogan had two that he really should have put away as well. Barcelona's XG for this one was 3.98 to about 2.51 for Girona. But I think it touches on what you're saying there in terms of maturity and game plan. I think Barcelona were straining themselves to get those chances, and they were never really comfortable in this match, whereas Girona were comfortable with how this match was playing
they
out.
They were very
backed themselves.
They came organically for Girona as a result of the way they were playing, whereas Barca were forcing themselves to, you know, always trailing on the scoreline. That is always a disadvantage, but it felt so much more natural for Girona, the way the chances were built up, than for Barca, who were just, I don't know, playing like on an impulse level and just going forward without really thinking too much about what they were doing. And that, I think, was the biggest difference in this game.
Yeah, and I think that, for me, I mean, we've spoken kind of ad nauseum almost about kind of Michel and Girona's systems, the way they rotate, the way they're comfortable on the ball, the fact that it doesn't seem to matter what is in front of them almost in terms of what the opposition do, they adapt and find a solution to it. But for me, yeah, the thing that is best or most impressive about this Michel side is that the personality that they play with is pretty insane. I mean, like you say, you get pegged back immediately after. You go, so it's 1-1 after 20 minutes, you've had a decent enough start. But yeah, to then kind of take control of the game and to really impose your will on Barcelona, despite the fact that Barcelona were pressing high, they were putting them under pressure at times. And yeah, the Barcelona press is a bit leaky, but that doesn't change the fact that Girona made it look pretty dreadful at times. And yeah, it's hard to find the words for what they're doing, because it's I can't remember seeing it in La Liga in my lifetime. I don't know if, Paco, you've seen anything similar to a side of this stature, of this budget. Let's not forget that Girona's budget is about, what, 58th of Barcelona's?
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know if you've seen anything similar to this.
Yeah, the word maybe would be effortless. You know, it seems effortless, but I'm sure that Michel, you know, drives home his point every single training session. But the way they play and the way they behave on top of the pitch, for example, I think it was the first goal, Jan Couto, the way he played tonight, he was, you know, Valencia's executor last week. Because once he came in the second half, you know, his two crosses were the two goals for turning the scoreline around for Girona. But in this game, he was a starter. And the way he played on the wing with that deep pass, leaving his teammates on his own, and later, you know, with the cross and the easy finish, Jan Couto at this point is flying. And this player, obviously with all of the background and, you know, the ownership of the player and so on, alone and so on, but the level of quality makes the game plan to be developed in an effortless way. And Girona has plenty of quality in most of their roles. And that's why Michel is perfecting what he used to do back in the day with Rayo Vallecano. Remember that he built up a squad in a similar way to Girona, but with the, you know, deficit of quality in some of the positions, because ultimately Rayo Vallecano are Rayo Vallecano, with their humbleness and, you know, playing at home, making it a fortress, playing at Vallecas. But it's not the same as Girona, who are at this point developing such a personality where they play the same at Montilivi and on the road. And that speaks volumes about the level of confidence that they are showing at this point. So in this case, and regarding the difference in budget and so on, you know, there's a trick on that because many Girona players are on loan, and that doesn't really compute on the financial fair play side of things. But yeah, ultimately, what Girona are doing, you asked me if I can find any team to compare. We have seen amazing seasons by Real Sociedad. We have seen amazing seasons by Villarreal. We have seen amazing seasons by Betis, but not in the same level of consistency as Girona. At this point in the league, whenever you cross the match day 10, match day 11 mark, most of the scouting areas of every single side are able to deactivate your strong points, and things get balanced out much, much more. And that's why I always say that the first 9-10 games of every league are some sort of, you know, mirage of what is later going to happen, because all of the scouting departments of every club tend to, you know, analyze everything and boil it down into just the strong points, weak points, and from the 10th game onwards, things normally change, especially on the top. The bigger squads are able to rotate more. Real Madrid, Barca, Atletico Madrid finally, you know, find them places like the top three, and then the rest of the league develops in a more or less organic and natural way. But what Girona are doing, I can't really find an example because of the playstyle. I've seen teams surprising everyone, being top of the league at this point, but we have to go like 20 years in the past. We have to speak about Valencia back in the day, for example, and so on. But the way Valencia played, it was very different. It was much more cagey, 1-0 winning and so on. What Girona are doing, I think it's unprecedented, and it in at least 25 years. So as long as we keep watching this, I think that overall fans should enjoy it as much as possible, you know, as long as it happens, because we don't really know when the form is going to dip. We don't really know if, yeah, that is the same question we have been asking ourselves for 5 or 6 games already, and it doesn't happen. So imagine Girona being on top during the winter break. That in itself would be the biggest story of the year. And if they are able to keep the form during the month of January, yeah, it would be, I don't know, one of the biggest stories, not only of the season, but of the century so far.
Absolutely, absolutely. Moving on to kind of the post-mortem for Barcelona, I'm kind of reluctant to get dragged into the kind of pylon narrative for Xavi Hernandez, because I think sometimes it becomes a little bit one-sided, and it's whenever Barcelona do badly, it's Xavi's fault, and so on, so on, so on. But I do have a checklist of things that I thought were so far off today. Firstly, I mean, we talked about the finishing and goals change games, but for that fourth goal, there's Miguel Gutierrez makes that run twice from the free kick, mm-hmm. where this goal eventually comes from. Nobody picks him up there, and he eventually makes that run the third time. It gets played into him, and that results in Stuani's goal. That's just poor concentration. It's the sort of thing that you don't expect to see at this level from, let alone the worst team in the league, the worst defence in the league, Almeria, let alone Barcelona. Second of all, I think the formation in the second half, it was really hard to see exactly what he was going for, because it was Araujo in the middle, Koundé outright trying to deal with Savinho, and then a combination of Balde and Cancelo sort of being at the back, but there was no central defender. De Jong was in there sometimes. There was no actual player kind of playing as the third member or the fourth member of that back four, and Cancelo and Balde were emptying it out pretty regularly as well. So that was pretty confusing to me. I don't understand why Rafinha continues to get so many chances, or at least stay on as long as he did, when he was essentially sabotaging Barcelona attacks all game today. And I know he's come up with goals and assists in the past, and I know he's relentless, and that's part of his quality, is the fact that he tries so hard, he makes so many runs, and he creates so much space. But there becomes a point where I think it was disheartening for Barcelona, because they would find themselves in space, they would find themselves in good situations, and he would be the one to kind of, yeah, ruin those attacks for them. And again, I don't like piling onto one player, but I find it really hard to watch him right now.
Yeah, Rafinha, I'm not going to, you know, defend his game overall, because it was pretty awful, but it's true that he got a couple of big, big challenges on him. I think one of them, he got like sent flying away in a counter from Barca. He got, you know, tackled from behind, and it was pretty nasty. But overall, yeah, Rafinha. It's not only the, you know, the accuracy on front and then having chances and not scoring and, you know, failing easy passes, but all around the attitude that he shows, the lack of pressure on, you know, on the offense, the lack of overall work ethic, and I think that Xavi, you know, back in the day, I believe that he didn't really like that, but if you see Rafinha in a couple of games and you see Xavi keeps starting him, I don't know, he maybe isn't as paying as much attention as I believed on this player. So, or maybe he believes that the extra quality that he brings to the table is able to compensate his lack of work ethic. I don't know. I think that Xavi should really look into different options rather than Rafinha at this point. And yeah, as you said, all of the jumbled mess of Barca in the second half at the back was just the perfect showcase of Xavi's inability to really turn things around in the game. I think that he was trying different things, and instead of delivering sort of revolution on the lineup and changing the pace on the game, it really just boiled down to another mess for Barca and made things even easier for Girona. And once again, we're talking about having a clear game plan against just winging it. And I think that Xavi did exactly that in the second half, and Girona took advantage of that.
Absolutely, yeah, I agree. And yeah, Lewandowski as well, Vitor Roque coming in the January transfer window. I think he's going to have to make some big decisions because, yeah, between him, Felix, Lewandowski, there's too many players mm-hmm. that are flashing as opposed to putting in consistent performances. And even though Ferran Torres, again, can be inconsistent in front of goal, at least you kind of generally know what you're going to get for him. But yeah, I don't know if you have any final words to wrap up on Barcelona. We've gone pretty long on this game. I think it deserved it. But we'll move on to the second half of the show if you have anything else to say.
Well, in this case, I would say that Girona being 12 points clear of Champions League spots is mind-blowing. 12 points above the fifth spot, which is Real Sociedad. And, you know, with that kind of advantage, I can say that were not for an utter crashing and burning from Girona in the second leg of the competition, we can definitely be betting on Monty Levy listening to the Champions League anthem next season, regardless of what happens with the champions, with the tournament race and the trophy race overall. But, you know, 41 points in 16 games, 12 above the fifth place, I think that is quite the comfortable advantage for Girona. And regarding Barca, under any other circumstance, I would say that they are, if not already in, very close to being in another crisis period. But unfortunately for Valencia, there's a Valencia-Barca next weekend. And, you know, if Aspirine could be transformed into a team, Valencia has often become one of them. So there's a duel of necessities in both cases, and I don't really like the look of things at this point between a Valencia who are struggling at this point in the competition and a Barca who will be reeling from this harsh defeat and will definitely be trying to, you know, come back with a vengeance.
Yes, Royal Antwerp up next in the Champions League as well. But we'll take a quick break for the second half of the show, and then we'll be back underway before you know it. So don't go anywhere.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Recorta William José. Pelota atrás, le pega, gol. Dios mío de mi vida, qué golazo, qué golazo, qué golazo.
¡Hola! ¡Qué gol ha metido!
Welcome back to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. It's Rudy Barlow, it's Paco Polit. We sort of went very deep into Barcelona's Girona there. The 4-2 win was massive, but that kind of took our attention away from Real Madrid and a 1-1 draw at the Benito Villamarín with Real Betis, in which was a fantastic game. Jude Bellingham opened the scoring as he's wont to do. Brilliant link up with Rodrigo there, but then an absolutely thumping goal from Aitor Ruibal. Equalised for Betis. Whoa. just when it looked right, Real Madrid were kind of taking control of this game, and then those last 20 minutes kind of belonged to Betis because Isco was an inspired man. This was a really good game and probably a good point for Betis and not the worst result for Real Madrid.
Also, Isco hit the woodwork in the last 15-20 minutes. So as you said, yeah, I think that Betis were fighting for the 3 points, which is already news in these kind of games whenever you play against Real Madrid at home. And in Real Madrid's case, as you say, I think that when they were feeling the most comfortable during the game, they were blown away by that Ruibal screamer, which went straight into the angle. One of the best goals of the weekend. So Betis and their quality have these kind of things, you know, when they are feeling or, you know, letting down their fan base with the way they are playing, and Real Madrid felt in control of the games, a flash of quality is able to level things very quickly. So, as you said, Isco often plays in a very motivated way against Real Madrid because of the way things went down back in the day. It happens just the same when he plays against Sevilla. And everyone knows that Isco, when he's motivated 100% on point and physically apt, he can be one of the biggest game changers in any 22-player football game. And in this case, he showed the best part of his talents in the latter part of the game. Real Madrid, once again, Bellingham scored, which is already not in our news list because it's more or less expected. And yeah, overall, the subs didn't really work for Ancelotti in the last stretch of the game, with Joselu coming in and so on. Problems at the back with subs, and once again, Lucas Vázquez. And I don't know, Real Madrid didn't really feel comfortable, and I don't know why. They always feel it a bit tough playing against Betis on the road. Maybe because of the playstyle developed by Betis and Manuel Pellegrini, but it's not the most comfortable ground and team to play against for Real. So overall, looking at the way things went down, ultimately the point might be not bad for Real. Always not winning is a disappointment regardless, but the main issue for them is that Girona keep winning. And I think that Real Madrid and Madridistas didn't expect Girona to win this weekend, and they did. So they are second, 2 points away from them. I 100% am positive that Real will have chances of once again assaulting the first spot and snatching it back. But yeah, overall, not the best showcase of their talents and a fair 1-1 draw on the road.
Yep, they are 5 points clear of Barcelona and Atleti. Atleti still have that game in hand against Sevilla, of course. They picked up a relatively routine 2-1 win over Almeria. Leo Baptistel got a late goal for Almeria and they made it a little bit difficult, but Correa and Morata goals made this pretty comfortable. The other game on Sunday, Cadiz were 1-0 up going into the closing stages against Osasuna at home. Roger Martí opened the scoring. And then a penalty from Ante Budimir, quite controversial one. Sergio Gonzalez, who was furious on Monday, as our subscribers, our pro subscribers will know, said that they're kind of ruining football after this game. But a valuable point for Osasuna, who avoided defeat. Cadiz keep themselves 4 points clear of Celta, who play on Monday night against Rayo Vallecano. Before we sort of get onto the Villarreal side of things.
By the way, Sergio is right, by the way, because Mbaye's handball is appalling. You know, that call is absolutely appalling. And 100%, I 100% agree with what Sergio said. They are bringing football down with the VAR calls and the refereeing level. Once again, the debate of the season, I'm not going to change my mind. Spain's refereeing is at this point the lowest level, the lowest quality level overall in Europe. And VAR isn't really helping. I think it's bringing it down even further. And nothing is going to change my mind on this because we see it week after week after week after week with appalling calls as the penalty delivered to Osasuna over Mbaye's handball, which is once again mind-blowing. Sergio's right, in my view.
Yeah, big words there, and problematic, because Medina Cantalejo, the head of the referee, says everything is fine. Moving on from that, because there's not much more to say about it. Villarreal Marcelino said before this game that Real Sociedad, for him, were the best team in La Liga, and they duly proved to be much better than Villarreal, because they won 3-0 in a pretty comfortable fashion. Mikel Merino, Martin Subimendi and Take Kubo, in the space of 10 minutes, made it 3-0. Capoue avoided a red card after kicking Bryce Mendes' arm, who was kind of supporting him. Yeah. He's got a broken arm, he'll be out for 4 to 6 weeks. He did well to escape that, and he's lucky there's not really a culture of kind of citing players for violent behaviour.
But you can say that the challenge was very harsh by Capoue, very tough. But at the same time, I don't believe that he wanted really to harm Bryce Mendes. I think that it was just a matter of bad luck because Capoue is a very passionate player in every play. You know, he always goes with lots of strength through every tackle. And I think that unfortunately, Bryce Mendes fell. He had his arm on the ground and Capoue kicked it and broke it. But I don't really believe that Capoue wanted to harm the opposite player.
Yes, but a big win for Real Sociedad, who moved into fifth place ahead of Athletic with their game still to come, of course. Pretty damaging defeat for Marcelino and Villarreal. I mean, they looked very off the pace in this game, didn't they? I think Parejo, Capoue, Albiol, you can't be starting all three of them these days. I think it's just too much to ask from, particularly if you're trying to press up against a side like Real Sociedad. I think Marcelino was not quite suicidal, but he certainly asked for trouble in this one.
But he really trusts the veteran players because he knows that he can build upon them the rest of the squad. But whenever you join the three of them at the same time and others who are playing at this point with other players, having too many of them on the pitch at the same time can be damning on the pacing of the team. And I think that the word for this game was outpaced. Villarreal were definitely outpaced by Real Sociedad in the first half. They didn't allow a single goal before the 38th minute, but after, you know, they came in quick succession, Mikel Merino, Zubimendi, and Take Kubo before the halftime. So, yeah, the game was polished regarding the second half. Nothing really could be done at that point, but I think it was more an issue of pace. And yeah, Marcelino's first defeat as Villarreal's new manager. But I think that he'll come around and switch things up, and possibly in the winter market, I believe, and I have sources backing that a couple of players are going to go, and a couple of players are going to come in, because Marcelino has full powers in the sports direction in Villarreal, because he signed with that under those conditions. So yeah, I'm not really suffering for Villarreal. Tough defeat, but they will turn things around, definitely.
Yeah, interesting January to come for them. Villarreal, kind of, I think in many people's view, got robbed 2 points with Ben Burton Diaz's goal being disallowed last weekend against Sevilla in stoppage time. And Sevilla were not happy at all about a disallowed goal. This time it came off in the series back or arm, depending on which side of the wall you fall on. But Sevilla, Diego Alonso, they are in dire straits. They're now 16th and still 4 points clear of the relegation zone. Celta with that game to come. But yeah, I mean, Diego Alonso has still not won a La Liga game, and we're, two months into his spell nearly. This can't go on much longer, can it, Paco?
He's, as I said earlier, the worst manager ever in Sevilla's history, especially after coming over to replace another manager. And yeah, Sevillismo at this point are just, a ticking bomb waiting to explode, because many things happened earlier this week with a shareholders meeting, all of the controversy, the whole fan base firmly divided between those who want the board to leave and to go, and others who still, are struggling to back the board and the president and the vice president and so on. Many things happening outside the pitch and on the pitch. Sevilla have reasons to be angry about that disallowed goal. But regardless, it would have been a draw on the road against Mallorca, which is a direct enemy on the road to remaining in La Liga. Medina Cantalejo, the boss of the refereeing committee, is a Sevillista, by the way. So yeah, Sevilla got damned in this weekend, and they got penalized by arguably a committee or a corp of referees who don't really think about the colors of its members. So even Medina Cantalejo being a Sevillista, Sevilla got severely punished with that call. And yeah, massive win for Mallorca, by the way. They hadn't won in quite a while already, and Javier Aguirre really took a deep breath after the game, because they are able to pull a plus three and pull away from the opposition and get a bit of breathing air after suffering for over a month and a half without a win.
Yeah, Sevilla have 4 games before Christmas. Lons in midweek, Getafe, Granada and Atleti to come before the end of the year. And Granada's the only one that you can really see them getting points out of if they continue to play like this. One of the things that stands out for me, they had a lot of chances in this game. Mallorca were perhaps a little bit lucky to come away with the 3 points beyond the refereeing decision. But yeah, Sevilla used to be a side under Lopetegui that, regardless of what was going on in the game, knew how to eke out wins, knew how to get points regardless of how badly or poorly they played. And they're just the opposite right now. Regardless of what's happening, they find ways to not win points.
And by the way, first goal by Sai Larin, who was massive last year for Valladolid during the second round of the competition from January onwards. And he was one of the biggest signings for Mallorca in summer. And he hadn't scored since he signed for Mallorca, so his first goal in the league means a massive 3 points for his team.
And just before we go, Paco, quick word on Valencia-Getafe. 1-0 win for Getafe. Borja Mayoral, 2 red cards. Pretty hilarious game. This is exactly what you expect.
Yeah, Valencia got bordalast through and through on their visit to Getafe, but Getafe didn't resort to shithousery. They were better overall, and things were made easier by that stupid red card to Gabriel Paulista, and later even easier after the 1-0 by Javi Guerra being sent off by saying to the referee, "Eres malísimo, malísimo," which really means that you are very bad, very bad. Which shouldn't be an issue, if other players were also sent off when saying that. For example, back in the day, Vinicius told the referee, the same referee, Cuadra Fernández, exactly the same, and he only got booked. So that's the biggest difference between, a side which is struggling, in this case Valencia, and other sides, in this case Real Madrid and Vinicius, who tend to have like a free out of jail free card when they play, and when they get you know, refereed by this individual in this case. But overall, awful game by Valencia, far inferior to Getafe, who got a +3, which is also very important to them, because at this point they are not looking down on the relegation battle, but they are already looking towards and eyeing European spots. The streak of results has been remarkable in the last 2 months. They remained unbeaten for exactly 2 months. They lost last week against Las Palmas in a very tough game, and they bounced back this Friday with this win against Valencia. So we should keep an eye definitely on Bordalás and his men, because with or without shithousery, they are picking up the points and doing very, very well so far.
And on that note, in that very Getafe fashion, Friday night cracker to keep the fans entertained, it does move Getafe up in the table. They are now up to ninth, just behind Las Palmas, who got that win over Alavés, and ahead of Valencia at the same time. So fascinating week to have kind of analysed and been across. Thank you very much to Paco for your time. Thank you very much to listeners for joining us for this one. Remember, if you haven't already, go and subscribe. Last week we were analysing the civil war at Sevilla and what was going on there. So you can get lots of good extra content, written content too, if you do upgrade and support us. But yes, thank you to the listener. Thank you for joining us on what was a thrilling weekend in La Liga, and especially at Montjuic and that Catalan derby. What a fantastic weekend it was. If you are a Pro subscriber, we'll see you again on Thursday. If not, we'll be back again on Monday. Adios.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.